Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast, where right before we started, I had the sentence, "Dear Black Panthers." We'll explain in a little bit. Hi, Bob. How you doing?
Is that actually a thing?
When we were talking about CBC and Polyev and
right.
and my thing when Trump took over the first time, I was like going to say to like Black Panthers or every group that maybe Trump didn't like right before he got elected, that group or after he got elected, the group should have said, "Yeah, we love Trump." Let me tell you, here at the Black Panther meetings, oh, we love Trump and everything he's doing. And then Donald would be like, "I like those guys." Give them what they want, just because, you know, thin-skinned fella. So,
my wife is an executive at the CBC, and I was saying to you, I can't remember in my time,
yep,
a Canadian politician campaigning on the promise to end Canadian jobs. I promise you, those people you hate, I'll get them. Yeah, so I was saying, maybe what they should do, to your point, to follow up on this, is, you know, she's got some pull in the programming department. They need to right-wing up their programming.
Yeah.
Your hour has 22 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
Son of a Critch becomes son of a Trump.
Oh, I like it. I
mean, it's a show about Eric and Donald Jr. and the crazy misadventures they get into.
Schitt's Creek, instead of little roadside motels, giant, beautiful towers. And, you know, and now it's just Trump towers all over the world.
Well, Schitt's Creek becomes Mar-a-Lago.
See, Bob, you took my idea, you took my six, and you made it an eight. And then there's the whole, all the roses are now working at Mar-a-Lago.
Matt, I've been looking my whole life for someone to take my six and make it an eight. That's nice to be back.
Yeah.
We should explain what happened.
Yeah.
All right, so you and I, we take these enormous gaps.
Yes.
You and I have gap years, basically. Go back to May, suddenly, you know, look, just no way to sugarcoat it. My dad died. It was very sudden. I found out in the course of a day he was here and then he wasn't. If you've ever been through that, you know, it's incredibly disorienting. And me and my dad were close. And my mom, you know, she needs a lot at this stage in life. So I said to you, look, I'm going to take some time and I'm just going to take care of that because I don't want to split my focus.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me how being part of the sandwich generation sounds so good. It's about sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually isn't that great being part of the sandwich generation. If you don't know what that is, that's when you're raising kids, but you also have elderly parents to take care of. You're kind of betwixt and between.
And yet at that time, still the best advice you'll ever get in this planet, enjoy every sandwich.
It really is. And I want to get to that about my resolution. I have one resolution for 2025. I think you'll enjoy it. Also, I'm so Gen X. And then not only so am I taking care of an elderly parent and trying to raise a family, but I was downsized for AI.
Oh my God, that's true.
That's true. I worked at Apple for 4.5 years. And then one day they just said, we're getting rid of all the contract workers because, and they didn't put it this way, but the AI has finally gotten good enough that we can replace you all. So they cut down their staff by about 80%. And all of us contractors were told, here's your final day.
And yeah, and all of that sucks. I remember I was away on vacation when I heard about your father. And it was just, I mean, that's fucking devastating.
Are you trying to create an alibi, Matt? Is that what this is?
Yeah,
is this like Murder, She Wrote?
Bob,
because you know it was natural causes, you can drop it. Now.
I'm turning your tragedy and trying to make it about me. It's what I do. And if you don't think I can't do it about the loss of a parent, hold my beer.
I just watched you do it.
Yeah, that's true. But no,
you took my six and made it an eight.
Man, it sucks. Like at this age, around the same time, just recently, I had a friend from university, my age, she passed of cancer. And then a couple days later, a buddy of mine's mom passed away. And at that same time, I'm still visiting my dad, who's doing well. Long-term memory, great. Short-term memory, bad. Mm-hmm. He's in a really good care home. And it was very weird because I went to visit him on the same day that I went to the funeral. And it's like seeing the end. It's like physically seeing the end. And by the way, before you arrived, I had found another friend, his father. I just found it today. I found it an hour ago that he passed away. Like we're just at this point.
We're at that point.
We're at that point. It sucks.
And God bless sports, because when things are hard, you can always talk about sports.
Oh God,
this is something I learned over the last 6 months, because you have to have these conversations and you're kind of stitched together in the moment by tragedy. There's only so much tragedy you can do. At some point, someone has to say, do you think the Leafs can do it this year?
Yeah.
And honestly, 9 times out of 10, it's the stupidest question in the world. Although really, you make a living from it. But in those moments, thank God we have sports, because they are one of the few neutral territories we have left.
It is so important. You cannot, if you tried to consume everything going on in the world and in your world and give it what you would think is the fair emotional response every moment of the day, within 95 minutes, you're curled up in a ball in a corner, getting way too existential. You need to be concerned about sandwiches, charging your phone, and what's going on with the penalty kill.
So I had a big question for myself at the end of all that stuff. You know, I was out of a gig and, you know, there'd been some pretty big existential changes. And I thought, you know, do I want to keep going down the path I'm going, or do I want to make some kind of life changes? And I thought to myself, nope, I make stuff for a living. But more importantly, I am the kind of person who makes stuff. So I have to do this. And whatever comes of it, you know, one of the good things about me and my life and my career and my whatever, and it's just, I say good things in the sense of that it's been good for me, is I've always taken chances. Mm-hmm. And there's always been high ups and high downs. You know, I've never been someone who just got a job and the job looked like that 20 years later.
Yeah.
So many chapters. So I'm just back in a very familiar chapter. Our good pal Jeff Merrick, who knows nothing about hockey, once said to me, just keep going and something interesting will happen. And he said that to me when we were in our 20s, and it's still true today. So that was my goal. I'm here to make stuff. And honestly, my resolution for 2025, I know you're sitting down, but you're ready for it? Yeah, go ahead.
Is it you're going to get your driver's license?
It isn't. I actually decided I'm never going to. Because yeah, no, who's kidding
on.
Who?
Hold on, Bob. You decided you were never going to get your driver's license about 20 years ago.
Okay, well, I've come to grips with it. Yeah. How about that? Yeah. No, but it's funny you say that, because it is 2025. What would Matt do?
Ooh.
For years, I have been fighting the happy-go-lucky Peter Panish Matt Cause, who just flits from one fun lily pad to another.
That's right.
And now I've realized it is the only sane way to live. Matt, All the ball busting I've done over the years.
That's right.
And there has been some ball busting.
There's been a lot.
I was wrong.
Yep.
You were right the whole time. And it was right in front of me.
Right in front of you. Right in front of you from the early days and off the record in 2000, where you were late for your interview to interview me for a job. And what I remember the most, I'd already worked with you for a couple of weeks in the summer. Mm-hmm. And then I was being hired formally. This was in the fall of 2000. And so I could make this joke. You were a little bit late. And you showed up in a t-shirt that was stained. And I remember, and I remember going, I'm glad one of us showed up in a interviewing shirt, because I just had a button-down white shirt on.
True story. I was in Keith Pelley's office back when he was the president of TSN, and I was wearing a shirt, and I'm not going to lie to you, it was ripped. Mm-hmm. Like, I had a shirt, and I'm sitting with the president of the company, and my t-shirt was ripped. All of a sudden, in the middle of it, he stops, he picks up the phone, he goes, Sue, who was his assistant at the time, Sue, can we pass a hat around the office so we can get Bob a new shirt?
That's exactly how Pelly would do it.
It's exactly how it happened. He'll come up later in the show. So anyway, Here's the thing that I did do. I didn't get my license, but how many times have I said to you, Matt, we should have an Instagram account?
Yes.
How many times have I said that?
Hundreds of times.
Made jokes like, okay, well, we'll just post that on the IG account, because I've never done it. Mm-hmm. Take a look at that, buddy. As I hand over my phone to you, we are on Instagram.
Wow. Matt and Bob, the Instagram account, Macko_and_cause, C-A-U-Z. Very easy to remember. But I think if you just type Matt and Bob, you'll find it. Look at this. And you got like one of them profile pics and everything.
Well, I had to pick something that was, I didn't want to do pictures of you and me for
obvious aesthetic reasons.
So I had a picture of when I was in Algonquin Park and my wife was driving. Mm-hmm. I was in the passenger seat, thus free to take a photo. And it was this incredible crimson sunset. And we were on the highway and we're going around the trees. And it was just like one of those moments where you go, I'm alive. And so I thought, it's up north, it's reflective, and it's kind of douchey.
Yeah.
That's certainly you. And since I'm trying to be more like you,
that's good.
I post a Muskoka picture, Matt.
I love it. I love it. The only thing missing is a glass of properly oaked balanced Chardonnay. But beyond that, that's a great pick.
So shall we get to some sports?
Yes.
I want to ask you a question about the Leafs.
Okay.
Because it's January, so now we're getting ready for the playoffs. Matt looked at me like, oh my God, I have 30 games. No, but
they are. They're getting ready for the playoffs.
They're getting ready. It is true.
They're leading the Atlantic right now. They're going to be in the playoffs.
How do you handle this trade deadline? Because there's always been so much consternation in the past. You know, is this a year that you go in on it? Is this not a year? I feel like some of the questions have been resolved and that they look more like a playoff team. They have better goaltending. They're more defensively responsible. They don't score so much off the rush. They have that great old sports adage, Matt, get an early lead and hold it.
Yep.
So how prepared are you to say that they're ready? And how, like, are they tinkering around the edges? I mean, Nick Robertson's gone. Ryan Reeves probably gone. You know, like, there's some fringe pieces that are probably gone. But when you're looking like a prospect, like an Easton Cowan, would you do a Ryan Riley, or would you look to do a Ryan O'Reilly, where you're trying to bring in someone that can
move the needle on the third line?
Move the needle is a good way to put it.
It's basically Fraser Minton, Easton Cowan, and your 2026 first round pick. And you don't have one this year, which is fine because that got you Jake McCabe. So, hey, point Kyle Dubas. A lot of negatives for you, Kyle, but that one positive for him. Absolutely. It's such a hard one because on the one end, yes, you go all in because Matthews and Marner and Nylander are at their prime. Tavares is playing very well. This is the best defensive group they've had in ages since probably Pat Quinn was here. And when Stolarz is healthy, between Stolarz and Wall, that's the best goaltending since a peak month and a half of Campbell or 2 months of Freddie Anderson. So by that, yes, you go in, you get rid of that first round pick, Cowan or Mitten, see ya. And you bring in a legitimate number three center that hopefully has at least 1 year of term.
I think you're totally right. In my effort to be more like Matt, I'm not just parroting your opinions. I think you're right. And you brought up some interesting points. On this pod back, you know, over the years, we talked about how Tavares was an anchor for this team. He was an albatross that they had to carry around. He's been really good. Like, I'm not saying fountain of youth good, but he feels like it really is a core four and not a core three and their older friend.
Yeah.
So how long can you count on that happening after this year? You kind of hope it continues into playoffs because older players tend to lose steam once you get to April. He's playing really well, and I'm not going to call it found money, but it's certainly, you can't count on it moving forward. Chris Tanev has been great for this team, but he's older and he eats a lot of shots, and you got to figure he's always just one shot block away from a 6 week injury.
Yep.
And who, like, we've seen this before, like Jake Muzzin was really good and then he was gone.
Yeah. He just, you know, he fell off.
That's the fear. That's to me always the fear. Like, I look at Tanev and I think of Muzzin, because Muzzin was a great find and he brought a lot to the team, and then he got banged up and then he couldn't go on anymore. And they're not deep enough on defense that they could afford to lose him and just move through it.
No, it's funny because Muzzin, one day we're like, hey, where'd he go? And he's in the front office? Is he like less good looking Jason Spezza? You know, there he is now suddenly working. And, you know, that's a shot, Jake. You're a handsome man. But no, you're right. It's got to be now because you don't know when the cliff is going to fall for some of the defensemen. You don't know if Tavares wakes up one day and suddenly his production goes down 30-40%. So, yeah, you go all in. And especially, it's not a juggernaut year. There isn't, like, Minnesota's been great. Winnipeg and Vegas have all had really good
seasons. Well, it's not a juggernaut year in the East.
Yeah, it's not a juggernaut year in the East. Washington, actually, they haven't had a three-game losing streak. So, I mean, good for the Capitals, but I don't know why I don't fully buy in on them. But, no, there's not a juggernaut year.
Because in hockey, teams rarely go from also-ran to top of the pops.
Yeah.
In a very short time, it's a really incremental rise. And there's always like weird outliers, like somebody's goalie gets hot in the playoffs and they take off. But generally speaking, and this is very true in Toronto's case, it's incremental growth. So Washington doesn't feel like they've earned the right to be someone you fear yet.
Yeah.
New York has dropped off substantially.
Jesus, that one is a strange one.
And I did a little research.
Yeah.
You know, I found, since I was going to be replaced by AI, I would try to use it.
By the way,
so I did a little research.
Know that Bob's, and I love this, It's paper. It's a pen.
Pencil.
Pencil.
It's pencil.
Pencil. Basically, Bob's notes are fuck you, AI, because that that looks like grade 7 arithmetic.
We talk about, like, the core four are maligned because they haven't delivered in the playoffs, but they kind of have statistically. So I know. I went and looked it up, and here's the thing, Matt. So right now, Austin Matthews averages 0.55 goals per game in the playoffs, which makes him the fifth highest average of current players, of goals per game average. Mm-hmm. Now, he doesn't have total goals because they've shit the bed and they haven't gone past the first round most years, so you can't look at total goals. But the games they've actually played, he's just behind Draisaitl and McDavid and Pasternak and I believe MacKinnon. So he's in that elite bracket. But more importantly, Tavares and Nylander at 0.33 goals per game in the playoffs are 18th and 19th respectively. So they've got three players that are the top goal producers per game on average of anybody in the league. Plus Mitch Marner is a point a game in the playoffs. So the core four actually does deliver points. Here's the problem, Matt.
Yeah.
They are 10th overall of all teams in that stretch in terms of total goals scored in the past 5 years in the playoffs. Per average, which isn't that great. But if you've got four players who are delivering tons of things, and then you've got an average overall average, you know what that tells me, Matt? Mm-hmm. It's you in French class. You're bringing down the mean.
Nobody else scores. Here is my gentle pushback, because I've done this topic.
Okay.
Because there's a day of
Let's go for it, because I have more stats.
There's a day of the week. It's
I called, have more AI.
There's a day of the week. It's called Wednesday. And on Wednesday is the day when you sometimes recycle your old leftovers.
Ah.
Put a little lemon on top, throw it in the microwave.
That's funny, because actually that's when the recycling truck comes by our house. Yeah. Okay, so it's Recycling Wednesday.
Recycling Wednesday.
Oh my God, that's a great bit.
The main problem with the Maple Leafs is when you look at the numbers of the core four, and then you drill down games 5, 6, and 7,
mm-hmm.
or in the COVID year, the final two games when they lost to Columbus, and you look at that over and over and over again, the stars disappear. They disappear repeatedly. And there's been some great games. There's been some magnificent game twos, threes, and fours for this core. Some of those numbers are juiced up, and they beat Tampa. By the way, great job by them. They beat up on Vasilevsky. That's a hell of an accomplishment. I'm not going to take any of that away from them. But when you look at the final, the elimination games, they all go bye-bye.
All right, so I'm going to counterpoint to your counterpoint, Matt.
All right.
In that same time that they averaged 10th overall in terms of teams mm-hmm. and their goals per game average in the playoffs, they were 17th in the league for goals allowed average per game, which is poor.
Yes.
Which is quite poor. So, yes, they're not scoring as much in these key games, but also defensively they've been shoddy and they haven't gotten the saves they've needed. And in fairness to that core four, when you're behind, especially in a game that you know is going to be decided by a goal or two, you have to play differently.
I would, against Florida, they scored 2 goals each game. Last year against Boston, games 5, 6, and 7, pretty
well, they weren't as good as Florida.
I know, but, you know, though, sometimes the better team doesn't always win. Against Montreal, games 5, 6, and 7, they didn't score.
Well, against that was a disaster.
No, I know it was a
that
disaster.
That was a train wreck. And I'm not trying to apologize for these guys. I'm saying you got to fix the problems you actually have.
The main problem is they can't score.
And if they had a third line center that could score, or a third line that could generate anything, then you can't load up your best defensive pairing on that top line nearly as effectively. I mean, you can still do it, and you can still suppress them, but it's like the boxer. You know, you can't guard all your face. You kind of got to take, you got to pick your spots, and you're going to eat shots if you keep presenting wave after wave of threat.
You know what the funny thing is? We both agree on the destination. It's the journey we disagree on, because in the end...
Well, because you're mad. Because you have to talk about these assholes every single day.
After they lose, it's the same fucking conversation. And then I can
It's like when you're mad at your partner, but you're not.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, fuck, you know, I just ask you to... The breadcrumbs.
Yeah.
The breadcrumbs. All I ask is that when you cut bread, you take the breadcrumbs and you sweep them. You sweep them. I'm doing the sweeping move, right?
Yeah.
And you know, and I would walk in and I'd be like, yeah, it's breadcrumbs.
No, you got to clean the breadcrumbs.
Yeah.
You do have to clean.
But my point is, you live with this day after day.
Yeah.
And it is an avatar for all the other things you're mad about.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Which we all do.
It's my number one thing I'm mad at is those guys never score in critical games for the last 5, 6, 7 years. So, yes, a legitimate third line center that can move the needle enough They don't have to be a star. Move it enough. Because if you do that, now you've got Nyes and, say, Bobby McMahon on your third line. And that's a good skilled third line that can generate offense.
They need one more person that's going to give opposition problems.
Yeah.
They're not scoring enough. And it's funny because in some ways we have this image of the Leafs, like, we're, you know, like, they're still the Pat Quinn team. Like, oh, they score at will. Like, this team actually doesn't score enough in the playoffs. They don't.
They're, a lot of 3-2 losses. A lot of 2-1 losses over and over and over again.
But the goaltending looks better. Like, I've been able to watch this team without the responsibility of talking about this team. Mm-hmm. So they are a perfectly capable team. They have a really good shot at making the final four because of goaltending.
Yeah.
They need health and they need a bolstered third line, especially in terms of scoring.
Agreed.
Which is everything. But you know what's funny is I just wrapped up your next 4 months of programming.
I'm aware of that.
In three sentences.
Yeah, I know, Bob.
You have to find a way to fill 2 hours every single day with those three sentences.
Bob, give him the old razzle dazzle. Razzle dazzle.
Are you wearing white gloves like Mr. Peanut?
The old razzle dazzle. Razzle. Lorenz on the first line? Oh.
You know what's so funny? Most Leafs coverage now is just who should be where. It's like an episode. I thought about this. The Leafs have become the series Friends, where the only plot driver is who's with who.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. We get the gist of it. Yeah. It's, you know, and Marner and Matthews are Ross and Rachel.
They are Ross and
Rachel. Should they be together? Yeah. Are they better apart? Like, yep. like season after season, it's just, are Ross and Rachel together or not?
And Nylander is when the show felt guilty. Let's give Ross a girlfriend who isn't white. you know, let's mix that up a little bit. And that's, and that's figuring everything out.
And your
out.
Point about Steven Lorenz, that's when Rachel winds up with Joey.
Yes.
Where it's like, this just makes no sense. Like, you're just out of options now. Yeah,
Bob, it's often been said, Steven Lorenz is the Rachel and Joey of the NHL.
Oh, there you go. Well, that's what the pod's here for. Yeah. I've got a lot of topics. Can I throw through a couple of these?
Yeah.
We could do one of two things. I've got some Raptors 5 questions.
Yep.
And I also have some .. And there's also NFL stuff to cover. Is there anything? You know what? Dealer's choice, buddy. You're the dealer. What do you want?
I have a big picture one, but it's been ages. I want a little .. in my life.
All right. So the idea here is I give short statements and then you choose which ones you want to talk about. All right.
By the way, did you write all this up like last night? Was this on the bus?
On the streetcar today. I had a time in the hour that I was sitting there.
Yeah.
But Just one car today. That's a win.
Nothing worse than when it stops and it says, all right, everyone get off. I'm like, but why? I'm not at my destination. All you have to do is go straight. Just drive straight.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
If you were a playoff team in the NBA, who would you rather have for this year? Jimmy Butler or Zion Williamson? .. Nick Nurse is a smart guy. I wonder if he knows what schadenfreude is. Because I got it. .. Severance is back, and now not only do I have to watch season 2 of Severance, but I have to rewatch all of season 1 because I can't remember a freaking thing that happened in the show. It was on 3 years ago. .. And finally, I've been dreaming a lot about high school lately. Does this mean I'm old? ..
Let's get rid of the first one first. It's Butler over Zion.
Okay. Just for this 1 year.
Yeah. Moving on from that. Amy and I are very bad at TV shows.
Okay. So this is the Severance topic.
The Severance one. We'll watch it, and it'll stop. Sometimes we don't even finish the season because we're also movie people. And then there's sports on. And then you look up and like, wait a minute, where are we in The Bear? And then, you know, you have to go back. What was our last episode? And then go back to the episode before that. Watch the last 20 minutes. TV's a lot of homework.
It's a great point. And in a way, it's like just a 10 episode series arc. Mm-hmm. It's like a 10 hour movie.
Yeah.
The way they write these things now. And then you don't know what happens for the resolution until 2 years later. So it is like refreshing, like back when you were in high school and you'd have to go, shit, I got the final exam. I can't remember what we did in October.
Yeah, exactly.
And you got to go back and refresh. I just watched Squid Games 2, which was really good, actually. It's a very dark show. I don't know if you would like it.
I watched part of the first episode. I'm like, not for me, which means I'll watch it 7 years from now, like I'm doing with Mad Men and I did with Game of Thrones. It takes me a while.
So I'm watching it with my daughter, and she has a really good memory because she's not old. And she's like, oh, well, this reminds me of this in season one. And I had to just go, yeah, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, look at that Easter egg. Good job, Cece.
She's finding Easter eggs. Yeah. I'm just sort of like, oh, yeah, everything's pink.
Could use an egg.
You know what else I realized about Severance? And this was not connected to Severance directly, but just something random that happened. I was flipping through Netflix, and I thought, I should watch The Good Place, because I really like that show.
So good.
And I forgot that Adam Scott was the demon Trevor in it. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, how underrated is Adam Scott? Parks and Rec, Severance, which is excellent, Demon in The Good Place.
Step Brothers.
Party Down.
Yep, Step Brothers, he was in that.
It's like... He is just like instant offense. For those of you who remember the Pistons from back in the Isaiah and Joe Dumars days, he's the Vinnie Johnson.
Yeah.
He comes off the bench and he is instant offense.
It's a good thing you're not old referencing a player from 40 years ago.
Well, he was, you know, he's the microwave.
He is the microwave.
He was the microwave. It's, okay, you know, so he was the sixth player of the year.
Yeah, he's No, the microwave is much better than, well, he's like Jamal Crawford. It's like, okay, shut up.
It's funny
nerd.
Because I was going to say, what do you want me to say, Jamal Crawford?
Yeah, exactly. That's the classic one.
All right, I'm dreaming. I had the weirdest dream last night, Matt.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me, so I dreamt that I was in the water and then my boat dissolved and I was at my cottage and there was this big snapping turtle, like big, like one of those leatherback turtles you see in the ocean, like abnormally large. And it looked at me and then it came after me and I had to swim away from the turtle. What does it mean if you're going to be eaten by a turtle at your cottage in a dream? Because I feel like it's probably bad.
Can't be good. First, 10 years ago, Bob would hate this dream because you're like, what do you mean at your cottage?
Yeah.
You would have gone full bourgeois.
Be like, man. Yeah. I'm like, I'm not even apologizing for having a place to go up north.
Look at me. Nope. I'm at my cottage on a boat.
Take that, AI.
Yeah, exactly. The only positive I'll say is if you're going to be chased by an animal in the water, I'd rather it be a turtle than, say, piranha or a shark or an eel. At least with a turtle, I feel you've got a fighting chance.
Well, the weird thing is, now that I'm thinking about it, we got out of the water, and then the turtle turned into a beautiful woman, and I was sitting there with her and my first serious girlfriend, and I had to choose between them.
Mm. Did you tell Sandra about this dream?
I did now.
Yeah. Hi, Sandra.
I just did right now.
Are you going to come home and she's randomly going to punch you when she's cleaning breadcrumbs?
I'm just going to walk in the door, and I'm going to get a pillowcase full of pop cans right to the ribs. Yeah.
Go enjoy your turtle girlfriend, Bob.
Yeah. Cece finds it, my daughter, she finds it hilarious if like an old girlfriend ever comes up. And I don't really have a ton of them. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't like some Hollywood guy with lots of dates.
A Lothario? Is it a Lothario? Is that the term?
It is a Lothario. Yeah. And I was not that.
Okay.
But she just thinks it's hilarious because she always thinks like Sandra's going to kill me.
Yeah.
Like, you're a dead man. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, she knows are pretty good. Hey, I want to talk about the Nick Nurse and Schadenfreude.
Yeah.
Because this was supposed to be the year of the Sixers where they finally make good on the process and they get Paul George. By the way, Paul George, never the answer. But moving on. Mm-hmm. That team has fallen apart. They hate each other. They're not very good. And it looks like another year of disappointment. And when Nick Nurse bailed on Toronto, and I don't mean at the end of the year, I mean halfway through the year when you could see he's like, fuck this, I'm not coaching this team anymore, and he shows up to press conferences wearing a Nick Nurse hat. Do you have Schadenfreude because that team is falling apart?
No, I feel bad for Nick Nurse.
What?
Nick Nurse coached them to a championship. The following year they actually had a better winning percentage, and then COVID happened. And they just, everything went to shit to that team. I still have a special place in my heart for Nick Nurse. And I giggle at Nick Nurse for this. He's skinnier Tom Thibodeau. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to play everyone. Oh no, Siakam played 41 minutes. Oh,
that's really funny.
That? Now we're going to play him 43. And then he went to the exact opposite of that. A land of Joel Embiid. Like, I love the idea that Nick Nurse, you know, it's the vegan going to Johnny LaRue's Beef and Boots, you know, if we're going to do old references. The Nick Nurse going into Joel Embiid's orbit is hilarious.
It is a weird team to pick. The only other one that would make less sense is if he actually went to the Clippers afterwards.
Yeah.
And tried to coach Kawhi Leonard. I'm not as nice as you, which I don't think is a big reveal, but... I'm just happy to see him go down. Hey, actually, I've got an extra bonus ... which will lead us into your big topic you wanted to discuss. Mm-hmm. Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Sports on streamers are like CDs in the 90s.
CDs, huge for a good chunk of time, and then suddenly, poof, they were gone.
It's the same thing you've always known, but mm-hmm. delivered on a new format, right, which causes a bump in revenue,
yeah,
but also masks the fact that there are structural issues with this product.
Well, if you saw the Tyson fight, there were structural issues there.
I mean the games themselves. Yeah. Like sports are breaking, mm-hmm. but the streamers are going to pour in all kinds of new money and excitement and enthusiasm. And there was no spike in the music industry quite like the 90s, because when everyone had to replenish all of their vinyl and their cassettes with CDs, all those records that you owned, like, you know, if I have 10 Led Zeppelin records, which I did, now I got to get 10 Zeppelin CDs. So it caused an artificial spike in the business, and everyone said, oh my God, we're in these dizzying heights. But it masqueraded the fact that the album was dying and that pretty soon we were just in a land of singles.
I will say first, CDs, really expensive.
They were so expensive.
Even for the time, like it'd be like, you know, 91 and it was like $21, which, you know, in 91, I was like, what? I'm 16. I can't spend 21 bucks on a CD. I guess the only thing is that sports isn't fragile in the sense that it's always going to be incredibly valuable because it's, you know, it's where advertisers can still get you to see their product.
So I want to give credit where it's due to this point, because I think it's brilliant and I didn't come up with it. Right. I've just become fascinated by it. My friend Adam Higgs, who's a writer, I met him at the Canadian Film Center, a major sports fan, brilliant guy. He's an executive producer now on FUBAR, so he sends me pictures of him and Arnold. Like Arnold sending him videos. He sent him this hilarious one from Oktoberfest. He's like, Adam, we're all here having fun and you're not here and we're laughing at you.
Really?
So it's like, you're my little buddy. He's getting like his balls busted by Schwarzenegger.
I love that. I also love the fact that Arnold's in his probably early 70s is still doing something you would do in your 20s.
Oh, Arnold's amazing. And now I just know more stories about how incredible a human being is. He really is.
Nice. But yes, getting back to it.
But getting back to the point, though. Wait, what was I saying again? I lost my point.
About music, about CDs versus streaming with sports.
Oh, yeah, right.
And now sports
right.
are...
But sports are broken in the sense that if you look at the live gate for a lot of things, take the NFL out of it. Mm-hmm. But ratings are down for the NBA. Everything is being buoyed right now by TikTok and short clips. But people aren't investing in the games the way they used to. Like watching game after game. We don't really... Like, you have to, professionally.
Yeah.
But most people are just happy to watch a period and then find out the next day what happened and watch the highlights. There's just an oversaturation of the product. But here's the more important part. There's no guarantee there's a payoff. Mm-hmm. You can watch a whole season and just be disappointed.
Yes.
And a whole season is a lot of time. And you might live with that once or twice. But look at the Raptors. They're in the middle of this rebuild. They feel very disappointing. Are we willing to go with this? Yes, if it works. But we just talked about the Philadelphia 76ers, and for 10 years they've been going through this. Now, that used to be a badge of honor for a sports fan, is that I'm with you thick and thin. But we live in an attention economy right now, and people don't want things that are delayed satisfaction or possibly never satisfying. Are they broken now? No. But as people grow up more and more in a media landscape where things are measured out in 15-second increments of satisfaction. How could I, like, could you imagine telling a 14-year-old, this is going to be pretty disappointing for 5 years, and then it's not going to work, but I really want you to pay close attention.
Yeah, it's...
We would do that because there was nothing else to do.
There's nothing else to do.
But now there's only other things to do, and we're starting to see wear and tear on these leagues. There's an artificial bump because of technology, because TikTok and YouTube and all this stuff has created this groundswell of attention. It's like the golden age for content, but the game is dying. The game itself, the product itself, and this is so true.
The regular season is dying. Yeah, the regular season. And again, we're not, the NFL's not been included in this.
Not yet, but it will eventually, but not yet.
Yeah, not yet. We'll see. I loved a couple of years ago. Huh? How do we get young girls? How do you get young girls in the NFL? Oh, here comes Taylor Swift. The NFL wins again.
This goes back to the idea of tanking.
Mm-hmm. Which is where I wanted to go.
Which is where you wanted to go. Because I think that tanking now is something that we as sports fans accept it as part of the life cycle of a team.
But it's getting even more than that. We're now getting angry when a team wins. And it doesn't even have to be our team. Like at the end of the NFL season, Everyone was up, like everyone's wondering to the Giants, why did you beat the Colts? And it's like, well, the players want to go out there and win. They're not there to lose. And then the biggest thing we were laughing at the end of the regular season was New England with backup quarterback, Joe Milton, went out and beat
good
the
memory.
What's that?
Good memory.
Thank you.
And he did the flip.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the end zone.
And he looked great. And that was, that should be a great story. New England beat Buffalo. The players are celebrating. The players are happy. And everyone was mocking the organization because they now don't have the number one pick. And last night, the Raptors beat Boston. Last time they played the Celtics.
They broke a 10-game losing streak to the hated Celtics, which should be cause for reverie.
Yes. And last time they played, Boston beat them by 54. And last night's game, all the starters were there. Porzingis, Derek White, Drew Holiday were all there. Tatum and Jaylen Brown played at least 35 minutes. And a reporter asked RJ Barrett, what is the point of winning? What is the point of winning this game? And RJ was like, that is the point, is to win games. And it's getting to the point where, and this is dumb, on a bigger picture intellectual level, what I'm going to say is dumb. I am tired of tanking. A lot of times, I don't give a fuck where the Raptors draft. I want to see Scottie Barnes if he can get better. I want to see Grady Dick. Like I'm starting to reject it because it's hitting this other level of, oh, you can't go and win games. There's 82 regular season games. That's a 3-hour block of entertainment. There's 41 home games. What should the NBA do? You six teams, you go play games, and everyone else will roll dice like Yahtzee and figure out who's going to get a chance to draft Cooper Flagg.
It's a great observation, and I love the fact that you almost had to apologize because it was not an intellectual reaction.
Yeah.
And one of the things that is really, it's changed the way we do sports. It's opened up really cool opportunities, but it's also shut it down. And what I mean by this is the intellectualization of sports. We have fantasy, we have gambling. Everything is about figuring out how this thing works. Even discourse online. We talk about nuts and bolts in a way that we never did before. People act like GMs, you know, kids with blogs. Like I listen to these Raptors kids and you'd swear that they were coaching.
Yeah.
The way they break down the X's and O's.
Because they've accessed all the information, all the film.
All the stats.
And they are, a 14-year-old now would be the smartest person in sports in the year 2000 because of the amount of information they have access to them.
And I'm not saying that's illegitimate.
No, it's
but
not.
But what it does is it comes at a cost, which is the emotional reaction to sports, which is why we got into it in the first place, really. It's more fun to be pissed off or to be thrilled than it is to be right.
Or measured.
Measured. But that's the interesting thing about tanking, because it's super measured. And if you get the number one pick, like we laughed at Zion Williamson earlier, deservedly so, but you know, the big parties in New Orleans when they win this generational talent, like there are moments within a tank where you can have, we had this with Austin Matthews and the famous,
we did it, Naylor. The Brian Hayes one. And by the way, there is truth to it, especially in the NBA. The NBA is the cruelest sport. Do you have one of these seven players? Yes, you've got a chance. Do you not? No chance at all.
So there are moments where there's possible joy or possible emotional reaction within the tank. But most of it really is, it's kind of like eating your greens. Like, you know, this thing's going to be good for you eventually, but nobody likes it in the moment. Like, we got Scottie Barnes at 4. He's a good player.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably always going to be either an all-star or just beneath an all-star level. And at 4, that's great.
That's great.
You know, I don't feel thrilled about it, though.
They need a player better than Scottie Barnes.
I don't feel thrilled about it. Like, on an emotional level, I'm pleased because I think this guy's going to contribute to winning. All of this is, they ask what you're saying about the tanking thing, and I just think it's so interesting, is we're asking people to not be emotional about something that's only interesting because it's emotional.
Yeah. The nerds have ruined a lot of things in sports because they're right.
They're right.
The nerds looked at the ace. They looked at Jack Morris and they said, get the fuck out of here. Here's six relievers. And we saw the Atlanta Braves win a World Series. We saw the Dodgers, even though they had all the bats, Freddie Freeman and Shohei Ohtani, you know, they did it by making sure they had all the relievers ready to go.
Baseball is the right sport because they killed baseball.
Well, basketball with all the three-point shots, which sometimes gets boring.
They are killing basketball. Yeah. They've already killed baseball.
Right.
Because baseball is basically like watching a spreadsheet come to life with players. I was watching the movie 21 with Kevin Spacey and Kate Bosworth the other day. Have you ever seen that?
The
MIT geniuses who go to, it's a Netflix classic where you don't know what to watch. It's like, I like cards. I'll watch this, right? And I started thinking about
Rounders wasn't on.
Could you imagine how much less interesting the casino would be if everyone could count cards and you basically just walked in and walked out with money?
Yeah.
I know it sounds wrong. Like, how could you not want to count cards? But that's not why we're thrilled by it.
Yeah, you're thrilled by the unknown. You're thrilled by the moment, the excitement, the energy that comes from it. And
when New Jersey used to win with the trap, with the neutral zone trap, everyone said, oh, they're killing hockey. Well, they weren't killing hockey. They were playing winning hockey. They were showing a way that you could take the rules and within the rules adjust your strategy so that the other team had a much harder time of beating you to the point where they became a multi-champion team. But what they really meant when they said they're killing hockey is they've taken the surprise out of it.
Yeah, they've taken the surprise. They've taken the fun out of it. They've taken the romance. Same thing, baseball, no starters, basketball, so many threes. And the thing is, they're right. The math is right. We're incorrect. But it still is supposed to be an entertainment product, and it's just a lot of it is just not as entertaining. And there's still wonderful basketball. I can't wait tonight. Cleveland OKC, that's going to be great. Victor Wembanyama taking on Morant. Hell, Zach Edey. Edey dunked on Wembanyama last night. Like there still is lots and lots of good, but there's just more of this aesthetic blah. Give me dumb owners doing stupid signings. I want that. I want guys shooting from the hip.
The worst thing back in the day that could happen was you were boring. Now the worst thing that could happen is that you're wrong.
Yes, that's a great point.
Right? And because of that, that's why I think sports are going to be in trouble. Because people aren't satisfied with wrong. And you know who's wrong? Almost everybody all the time. Most of the league, your point about the NBA and how there's really only four or five teams who have a legitimate shot.
Yep.
There's 30 teams. That's 25 teams that don't have a legitimate shot at winning this thing. You're asking the fans of 25 franchises. So if I do this, 83% of your franchises, you're basically saying to those fan bases, yeah, it's not worth your time.
Here's what you're telling 83% of your fan bases. I'm going to give you two web pages. Which one do you find more interesting? The box score of your team winning a game or a mock draft? Which one is more interesting? Because the regular season is now being set up. That mock draft is more important and more compelling for you as a sports fan than a box score of your team beating the Boston Celtics.
I follow things now like a story. I follow, you mentioned Wembanyama, and, you know, like everybody, I'm obsessed with him. So I check the San Antonio box score every morning. But I don't feel like I have to watch the game because I get the information I need for the story to keep going from TikTok, from YouTube, and from the box score. I actually don't need to watch the game. And you know why? Because he only does two or three cool things per game, and the freaking thing's 2.5 hours long. But the bigger point is that kids today who are growing up are not used to being told wait. And they're not used to being told this might not go anywhere. Everything goes somewhere, and everything pays off fast. And sports are just not like that.
We grew up waiting 45 minutes to see the shark.
Dude, we took it as a badge of honor.
Just reference. Got it in. 44 minutes in.
Nice. Beautiful. Return of the Jedi. Revenge of the Jedi.
Yeah.
How long did you wait? I was 6 hours.
Wait, sorry.
In the line.
Oh, God. Jesus.
To go see Jedi.
Oh, to see Return of the Jedi? I remember where I was when our parents took us out of school in like grade 4, and then we waited so long in line. I think 1989. I'll go 89. Batman. We got there at 9 in the morning, and the box office opened at noon. We got our tickets. We lined up, I think it was at Yorkdale, and then we arrived several hours early so we could have a decent seat to see Jack Nicholson fight Michael Keaton.
So here's why sports are in trouble. Because try to tell a kid today, stand in line for 6 hours to watch something that may or may not be good.
Yeah.
And probably isn't. Mm-hmm. Because the fun of it will be the wait.
Yeah.
The journey will be what you remember, hanging out with your pals, and one of you goes to get the big gulps while everyone else waits and holds their spot in line.
Yeah. No cuts.
Exactly. Like, try to convince kids today who are used to thinking that if they have to wait 10 seconds for something, you've really fucked them over.
So this all just comes down to the slow erosion and devaluing of the regular season.
Of the product itself.
Yeah, of the product. And you know who's one person to blame for this, Bob? And a famous quote. And it was used last night on SportsCenter after the Raptors won and Jennifer Hedger was asking, do the Raptors have a chance to get in the play-in? And Wesley Chang said, to quote Masai Ujiri, play in for what? Mm-hmm. That statement, when Adam Silver heard Masai Ujiri say that, he should have been rip shit. Because play-in is about fighting hard in the final third of the regular season for a chance to get into the playoffs. And now 50, 60% is like, meh.
So the Miami Heat made it to the final as a play-in team just a couple of years ago. So you can always point to the exceptions and say that's what it's all about. But people, again, to go back to this idea of that's not the smart way to look at it, most play-in teams lose. Like, look at the Jays. Are you satisfied that they made the wild card game?
Oh.
It feels like a big dud, but if they'd gone on to make, you know, the final two or you know, the World Series, then you go, okay, well, that was worth it. But most teams that doesn't happen for, and it's the smart people, which is now everybody because they know how the system works, are like, yeah, that's not worth my time. That's not interesting. All right. So this actually goes nicely to some of the Raptors questions I got.
Yeah.
Okay. You ready? Five questions for the Raptors. Who is more likely to be a part of the Raptors organization in 2027? Cooper Flagg or Masai Ujiri?
I think Masai Ujiri. Ooh, but they're owned by... Rogers owns it all now. Rogers owns it all.
Their Edward. Contract is... His contract is up in 2027. It's for a reported $15 million.
Right. I'm going to go Cooper Flagg. If it was still half Bell, half Rogers, I would have gone Masai. But it's not like old Eddie Rogers is, you know, the past is not a good one.
We're going to have a 20 to, say, 10% chance to win Cooper Flagg's rights to join the team.
Yeah.
So the idea that there's a better than 10 to 20% chance that Masai Ujiri is going to re-sign a big contract with this team versus move on is zip. Like, he ain't back. I don't think they're going to fire him. But I don't think he's coming back.
It's going to be a mutually parting of the ways.
So think about this in terms of generational turnover. There is a better chance in both of our estimation that Cooper Flagg is a Raptor than Masai Ujiri after two more seasons.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Would you deal RJ? Everybody says that you would deal Jakob Poeltl. It seems crazy that you wouldn't. Bruce Brown's out the door. Chris Boucher's out the door. RJ's having a really good season. Certainly for RJ, he feels like he's a legitimate third scoring option.
Yeah, he was like, great last night in the win over Boston.
You know, he's not quite the same player as Wiggins, but like when Wiggins went to Golden State, he was an important part of winning. If RJ feels like he could be that kind of impact, differently because they're different players, but he could be an impact player on a championship team. He's also been the most fun Raptor to watch all year. And he's got two more years and he's from Toronto. Do you deal him? Because you can get something, or do you keep him because the team is so depressing, RJ's actually a good story?
Well, I think you keep him because I think his game can certainly age. And I think like 4 years from now, he'll still be under 30. And if you do get a high pick, and if you do get that chance to get a player who's better than Scotty Barnes, and then if Scotty Barnes is your clear number two and you have another clear number one, then RJ Barrett is perfect in that spot. So yeah, I would keep RJ Barrett. Also, great attitude, willing to learn, works his ass off. All over keeping RJ Barrett.
You totally trade him. You absolutely trade him.
Debbie Downer.
And you know why?
Why?
Because of everything we just talked about for the last 10 minutes. So RJ Barrett, if you hang on to him for two more years, gives you a chance to be a really exciting bottom third team. A very likable team that has play-in written all over them. What's the point? You could actually get some pieces. And I just think about Oklahoma City. I look at that shining beacon on the hill that is Oklahoma City. They have so many picks.
But they're also the exception. They capitalized on the desperation of the Clippers to get out of the Lakers shadow, where they could get Paul George, which would get you Kawhi, and then, you know, they gave up everything.
They gave up everything.
I'm keeping RJ Barrett.
Yeah, I think that's an emotional and not an intellectual decision.
Fine, I'm good with that.
All right, so then
Shut up, you jerk. There's nothing emotional about that.
All right, let's move over to the third member of the three-headed triumvirate that seems to be the coronation over a kingdom of nothing. Emmanuel Quickley, what is more likely to happen? That he become a Raptors legend, or that he actually already is a legend because he doesn't really exist?
We all know it's door number two. He's overpaid, pokeroo, snuffleupagus. Do you know right now,
overpaid pokeroo.
Right now, no athlete in the country of Canada makes more money than Emmanuel Quickley.
Oh my God, is that true?
No athlete in Canada in hockey or basketball or the CFL, as much as you might think how much Nathan Rourke is getting paid by the BC Lions, no one is getting paid more than Emmanuel Quickley. That'll change soon when other contracts kick in, but as of this day.
You and I, going back to it, when they had to sign him or move on, they were obviously going to sign him because they didn't make that deal with the Knicks to not sign him.
Yeah.
They believed that he was a piece that was instrumental to winning moving forward into the new decade. That is not proven to be true, which brings me to my last Raptors question, one that's a Matt Cause special. You ready?
Yep.
In 25 years, which team is Toronto's second most loved team? The Raptors or the Jays?
Oof. I'm going to go the Blue Jays just because there is more history, so it has your hooks in you more than basketball, because Blue Jays have been around since 1977. So it just, it has that generational thing. So I will go the Blue Jays, even though right now there is no one more despised in this market. There is no one more despised than Atkins or Shapiro. Mitch Marner could come out and say, I think we are the toughest playoff team over the last decade, and that would not generate the same amount of hate as anything Atkins and Shapiro do.
They haven't won in 33 years, which is a lot.
Which is a lot.
Which is a lot. And I'm not sure I see an easy path for them to win in the future. The only thing you can say is that MLSE, like Rogers, is willing to spend on the Jays, not MLSE. We'll see. The Rogers is willing. But does that continue? Like, the telecoms are starting to...
You know, they're not as mighty as they were. And if they're willing to spend, why is Vlad not done?
Bell is getting out of sports. Bell is probably going to get out of media because they're just trying to, quote unquote, focus on our core product. But they're reporting losing quarters quarter after quarter. They are underperforming. And a lot of these decisions were made, like, to invest in sports when everybody was flush with cash. And it just seemed, the funny thing about sports is it's, a bit of an emotional decision because it's more fun to own than a cobalt mine.
Yeah. But a cobalt mine gets you more money, but it's not fun when you're at your parties. Hey, what do you do? I own a mine. What do you do? I own a baseball team. Cool. Everyone, Steve owns a baseball team. Get out of here, miner who has a lot more money.
Modern society is basically, what do billionaires find fun?
Yeah.
That has become 50% of our cultural narrative. Is it used to be what who are celebrities banging?
Yeah.
And now it's, what did billionaires buy?
Oh my God, that's depressing. I miss the 90s. Getting a copy of People Magazine. Us, not People. People's too highbrow. Us Magazine. Ooh, who's in a love tryst? I think I learned what the word
"tryst" was. As Sandra once said to me, as we were on our way to the beach, I want to get a magazine, and I want on the cover it to say, whose butt is this? And then there's a butt, and then there's a circle around the butt, and you have to guess.
Oh, that was a thing. It was glorious. I'm sure now it would be considered problematic. Bob, we got like 3 minutes left.
Oh, okay.
No. Put your notes away. This is simple.
Oh, okay.
Bills, Ravens.
Yeah. I like the Ravens. If I'm honest, I like the Ravens.
So do I. Yeah.
I think the Bills won't be bad. Like, I don't think they're going to get bludgeoned. But Josh Allen plus hardly anybody versus Lamar Jackson plus Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
Just feel like Derrick Henry is going to be the difference.
It just comes down to that. And John Harbaugh, better coach than Sean McDermott. Derrick Henry, better than James Cook. Lamar, Josh Allen, whichever one you want to do.
Push.
It's a push. The only way you go Buffalo is Zay Flowers doesn't play. And Lamar Jackson, is the modern day Peyton Manning. Incredibly talented, incredible regular seasons, all the regular season numbers, but constantly loses in the playoffs as a favorite. And that's Lamar Jackson, 2-4 in the playoffs. That's the, and the game's in Buffalo. That's your argument.
That miracle game against the Chiefs when the Chiefs scored after Buffalo had gone up with that last-minute touchdown, somehow they kicked the field goal within like three plays, sent it to OT, scored on the first possession, and I felt like that was the end of the legacy right there. Buffalo's very good.
They are.
They're very good, mm-hmm. But Baltimore's really good. And then you just ask yourself, which team is better suited to win in the playoffs?
It's close, but it's Baltimore. I can't wait. It's
takeaways is the big issue. Like, can Buffalo get takeaways?
And the Ravens in the last five games, if they've won all and they bludgeon their opponents, Lamar Jackson is just one turnover in those five games.
Honestly, in the AFC, this is the matchup you want to see. And then the one you hope you see would be the next round if it's Detroit versus L.A.
Yeah, you want L.A. for the human interest story. Philly's the better team, but...
You want LA to make it through for obvious reasons around the wildfire. And then also you have the connection between the Lions, who are then playing to make the Super Bowl.
And Matt Stafford.
And Matt Stafford. There's just so many storylines if it's Detroit and LA.
And that's how we end it. Because in the end, Bob, what do we love? We love stories.
We love stories. And why do I say that sports are in trouble? Because the product that's dying is not the regular season. It's the story of sports.
And the story here is that we're back. Mac Cohen Cubs is back, and we have an Instagram account. Can I put up like douchey shots?
Yes.
Like, you know, with wine and sunsets and stuff?
I insist.
We should do a contrast, like your Friday pick versus my Friday pick.
So yours will be wine and mine will be, what do you mean Pam Bondi is going to be the attorney general?
Yeah, I don't even know what that means. Goodbye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Mac Cohen Cubs podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.